record here. Okay, yeah, we should be good to go.
Right, so
what's the second topic? Shucks.
Oh,
I forget. Yeah. Oh, mistakes artists make.
What's the second topic?
Mistakes artists make.
Like, what artists. Kind of mistakes?
Oh, no, I see an master. Anything. Masters, in many cases, recording ownership.
What kind of mistakes we talking
about? I thought that was the second one. So I
we could do it. That's fine. Way. That's fine. I don't mind switching because you have it laid out here, and I could follow it that way. Ownership of masters, copyright, etc. Now we're not really professionals here, but we are commentators.
Yes.
We are musical commentators. We are musicians commentating. All right. Yeah, we ready. Sorry. Huh? Yes.
Or pork.
I
feel it's pork.
It's pork. Yeah. No, it is pork. Hmm? Everybody's ready. Yeah.
Alright, so we ready?
Mm-hmm.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is not the 7 o'clock news. I'm probably right on time. Yeah, it's 10 to 8. Welcome back to another episode of For the Most Part Podcast. We are going to be discussing some things, but I want to introduce my panel. Adriel, I'm not sure. It is absolutely hilarious. I just felt like, you know, needed a special zoom in on that. We have Adriel to my left and Miss Louise Clark on the Zoom. And we're going to have a little discussion about masters and ownership of masters and kind of understanding, you know, how that plays out in the industry. So, Louise, I see you in your notes here. You have a definition. So hit with the definition and then let's have a conversation about this.
Okay, so very essentially, in music, a master recording is the official original recording of that song.
Okay.
And it can refer to either like a studio recorded song, like a radio single that you listen to on the radio or streaming platform,
mm-hmm.
or it can refer to a performance.
Okay.
Right? Because I'm sure you can think off the top of your head some songs where like there's this one live performance that you go back to over and over again because it's considered one of their best.
Yeah.
Like who is to the studio with Jana Hotel California?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The studio version of Hotel California and the live version is two epic, legendary versions.
Yeah, very different things. And it's so popular that, you know, you would need to own the masters of that live performance as well, right? So that is, in a nutshell, what it is.
Okay.
It's the master recording. So if you think back to, like, back in the days of when everything was, like, on tapes or on records and stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, like there's this one version of the song that would like have a home on some sort of media, and that is considered the master. And it's something that a person can own.
Right.
And obviously, if someone can own it,
they can do whatever they want with it.
Mm-hmm.
They can do whatever they want with it, including monetize it. Various.
Okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if the artist owns their own, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, like let's say they have an epic comeback like Mariah Carey. We talk about Mariah Carey a lot in this podcast, right? But imagine
I wonder whose fault that
an
is,
artist
but...
lol. But like if so like an artist like Mariah Carey has
who actually owns the rights to her masters, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, she owns the rights, right? But the point I was gonna get at is she has songs that will always make her money. Her Christmas repertoire is, I'm pretty sure her Christmas repertoire is
Christmas. That's it. That's all. We're going to get copyrighted, especially. Yes. Yes, go ahead.
The thing is, if she owns not just her master's, but she is able to retain the full publishing rights, which I believe is pretty much one in the same.
Right.
Then any money she makes from that song being number one on iTunes every single Christmas, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Then she pretty much gets most of the royalty.
That song come like pastel, is when it come out Christmas time.
I wasn't ready. Yes, Israel.
I'm gonna repeat that for the house to hear, and I want in post that they put a picture of a pastel. The man said, please. All I want for Christmas is You by Mariah Carey. Only comes out once a year, like pastel. So please insert a picture of our pastel. Thanks. Yes. Proceed. Yes,
please.
I wasn't ready. Yes. I was far from it, but yes. Go ahead, Louise. Yes.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, that is what it is.
Right.
And, if you are a popular singer or a popular act, and you make your money from each time someone plays your song on iTunes or Apple Music, which I learned are two different things, by the way.
iTunes and Apple Music.
Yeah, I actually had no idea that like they were.
Yeah, no, they're not. They're essentially separate. We could talk about that maybe in another podcast.
No, yeah. I'm just saying. But like, if it is you make your money from, Spotify and other streaming platforms. The person who owns the material, or the entity who owns the material, if they're a popular singer, think about how much money that could be, you know, that you don't earn. If you don't own it as an entity, like you don't legally own it.
Yeah.
So anytime profits come from it, you can't get those profits.
Mm-hmm. Right.
At least not as much as you thought.
I'm seeing on the list there's a list of artists who own their masters. Beyonce, Anita Baker is our most recent one, which we should fairly talk about. Taylor Swift as well. Did not own the masters before, but she went and re-recorded her songs, and now she owns those masters, so she basically making more money. Mariah, etc. So let's talk about the Anita Baker situation. This was mid to late last year.
Right. 2021. She actually tweeted on September 3rd, all my children are coming home. Catalog impossible things happen every single day. Now remember that Anita Baker, she ain't cut one album.
She ain't cut in more albums. Than 20 something years or 20 something years.
Her repertoire probably spans just as much as
I Am Alive.
And
Adriel was not a concept at the time, but yes, we proceed.
Oh my.
It's a very good reference as to how long Anita Baker has been in the business.
It is.
And I do remember that there was issues with that, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and right. So back in March, she took to social media telling her fans, yo, do not buy my stuff until I have the rights to my catalog. And she said this on Twitter. Twitter, of course, saves the day again.
Yeah.
Now, she tweeted, miraculously, I have outlived all of my artists' contracts. They no longer own my name and likeness. And by law, 30-year-old masters are to be returned. Fortunately, they're going to make a fight for it. I'm prepared to do that. Please don't advertise or buy them.
Right. So then that's a smart way to basically boycott. You know, if you want to get back, gain some power back or gain some footing in the industry. I go on tweet. I go and tell people, don't buy. Well, I own my masters, so hard luck. But
amen.
But if I get signed to a record label for other songs that I've done, I go and tell them, like, hold all your horses, because wait until I own them.
Yeah.
thing is, I find it really interesting that this happened at this point in her career. You know,
right? Rather than when she was making number ones.
Yes, but I imagine, as she said it herself, miraculously.
Yeah,
I have outlived all of my art contracts.
Right.
She's out. Yeah.
So I want to actually speculate a couple of things. Okay, so the first thing that I can think of is that it was probably social digital spaces that would have probably caused her to realize, well, I'm not making no money from this, from my voice, my imagery, my sound, my everything, the Spotify, the Apple Music, the iTunes, the Apple TV, if it have a music video, some concert, whoever, she must say, but how are I only getting a dollar or none if it came down to that? And she probably said, oh, maybe this is the way to take back control. You know?
Yeah.
Do we have any examples of artists who have done exactly like Anita and taken back control over their masters?
Beyonce.
Okay, talk to me about that.
I didn't know that one either.
Yeah, at a point in time, Beyonce was like, nah, I want to do the hot girl things. She decided she want to do the hot girl things. So she actually started her own company. And she basically, and she's not the only artist who's done this,
right,
by the way. But I guess, sorry about that. So Beyonce started a different journey when she got a new company to represent her.
Okay.
Right? And that was an entity called Queen Bee. I believe it's also Queen Bee.
Okay. Right? Okay.
So that means that that company not only, not only would own her masters, but just like with Anita Baker, her likeness, her name, any part of
branding,
the brand that can be monetized.
Right. Beehive.
Right? Yeah, so Beyonce made that step. It's a company called Parkwood Entertainment, and Chloe X Halle is signed to that label. Beyonce owns her masters, but this didn't happen until 2007.
Okay.
Consider that she would have started off before 2000. But right. I guess to Beyonce's parents are like stage parents, and I think up to this day they still probably have some sort of, they probably instill right values.
Because I want to actually ask the house this question, and I'm gonna put Ollie on air. Do y'all think that it is a wise idea to own all of your masters in the industry? Does it make economical sense? I've heard that sometimes it robs the publishers and the record labels of an opportunity to own something. What do y'all think?
I think it really depends, because if it's from a record label standpoint and I sign you as an artist and I'm funding you, I give you, let's say a rapper, I give you money for your bands, for your gold chain, it might be a little unfair that you taking all the money from the songs.
Right.
So,
Adriel, that it's not the artist does not go to the record label and say, hey, give me my property now so I can bounce. No, that some kind of finance, some kind of money, how to talk about it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you're not wrong. In fact, you're right. Because
right.
I get that.
Right.
I get
right.
that. And because and some record labels make good money for their artists, not to just have the right image, but to have the right training, have the right skills. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So house, I want to ask the house, McKasey, what do you think about this? What are your thoughts? Do you think that should artists take over the masters or some percentage of it at some point in their career, or should it just be a label thing and then an artist thing?
Personally, I don't think it's
going to
be from two perspectives. As an artist, sure.
Right.
If I make art, I'd like to own my art.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, this is not really art. This is a product, and most artists not gonna have an idea what to even do with their masters. I own the stores. I own the platform. Where you gonna me giving you your master? What are you gonna do with it? And in fact, it is not your master, as he said. Like most of the times. I'd like to say even 90% of the time, it's the label paying to record it, they're paying for all the photo shoots, they're paying for the artist development, the labels are paying for everything.
Right,
so
right.
So why are you now trying to own something that you didn't really pay? You know what I come like?
Yeah.
I come like I work in Toyota. I get paid to assemble a Corolla and then I feel I must have some type of ownership. In that Corolla, because I use the skill set that I have to
build the Corolla.
As I say, it's tricky, but I feel we set up ourselves, and we set up ourselves with a lot of bad habits right now, and a lot of bad information is out there making people make poor decisions when it comes to their art.
Right.
Because art right now have no real value now. It's a perceived value.
Yeah.
And I think that the record labels, they are the ones who help the artists more than they can imagine by creating the perception
right.
in the public's mind that this art has some type of
value. Mm-hmm. Right,
you know,
right.
They
right,
are the
right.
ones who are doing that. So
it kind of boils down to individual perception of what you think your value is.
Yeah, not only that, the art for me is just work. You pay me to do a job. At the end of the job, I'd like to get a pension.
Right.
And if that's what the artist them saying, then yo, this having an ownership of this master is my pension, part of my pension plan, then arrange that from the beginning. You know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So that some percentage occurs later on, even though you don't own everything.
Yeah, or anything at all.
Yeah.
You can still get some type of
back pay kind of thing.
Yeah, like a back pay, exactly. But you have to negotiate them things up front.
Wow.
And I think what happened with a lot of those artists is that the labels would have lied.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or over 50 years, the contracts would change. Like 50 years ago, I would give Anita Baker a contract and tell her, hey, it's cool. I'm sure you could get some, you could own your masters when you're done. And that executive died and their son take over.
Yeah.
Come with a new policy that, listen, we had to maintain ownership of our masters because that's where we're getting money from. So,
right.
Yeah, like, it's a kind of catch-22 dread because if you're an artist and I'm telling you, take 0% of your masters, but I'm giving you $5 million up front. I'm taking that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
that 5 million will come in handy.
Yeah,
I'm just saying,
because chances are you won't even be able to monetize
exactly
your masters.
Yeah.
So
that's
the 5 million does come up.
That's understood. So yeah, that's my piece there. I think that we just need to be more educated about the business,
right?
And stop sharing information that's not really applicable to the masters, nothing.
Right.
The way, Arista, Def Jam. If anybody, my masters are for sale. If you're all interested, they for sale. I don't want any of it.
Wow.
So, Cammy. McKasey made a point. Can McKasey hear me?
McKasey Louise wants to know if you can hear her. No. You could pass share the phones on them.
No. I mean, it's not necessary. You can always.
Yeah, I can hear.
He can hear you. He can hear.
Okay. Hi, McKasey. So, you mentioned that perception of the value of someone's art, mm-hmm. right? The perception, and I love that you said that, because before this episode, Kemi and I were talking about the late David Bowie, the English singer,
mm-hmm.
right? Classic rock. I'm sure you know the band. He died in 2016, and currently Warner Chappell, which is a subsidiary of Warner, they are looking to purchase his entire catalog, as in publishing rights and everything. And it is believed that it could be as much as $250 million, right? Now, I remember when I was first speaking to Kemi and I asked her, I guess, you know, hey, how much do you see? So she figured billions with a B.
Yeah.
And I had to be like, no sis. According to Variety magazine, it could be as much as $250 million. But of course, the deal isn't settled yet. So,
right. So the value could change. Yeah.
The value could change. But so do you think, I mean, as a producer yourself, do you think his estate did the right thing by selling it for that amount? Do you think, like, the one way to perceive the value of his masters, I would say, is maybe some of his still surviving fans stream his stuff, I'm not sure if all the people stream, but let's assume that they do.
Right.
But how do you ascertain what makes someone's masters valuable? Is it that you believe, as a producer, as a record label, hey, I can retain this artwork because like a company like Warner Brothers should buy this artwork for this amount of money because of its restreaming value.
Can I answer?
Yeah. So once Mackenzie answers, then Adrian could give her answer. Yeah.
Well, it go back to what we said just now, right? Firstly, 90% of us, even in the background, have no idea of the value of these pieces of work. So all over the world, as you rightly said, he has fans that still streaming his work, still listening to his music. I'm pretty sure they are Spotify and Apple and all these platforms that have playlists with his music playing in it. So how these industries set up, there's definite, it's kind of like Cut in Trinidad, you know, Cut used to pay me $250 every year whether your song play plenty or not.
He's
now one of the big top artists, like your stuff now, you're gonna get $250 from Cut. That's how it is with a lot of these bigger artists as well, because you have a certain level, your music is on a playlist, whether it's on retro radio stations or what, so they know exactly how much money these songs generate.
Mm-hmm.
They know exactly, and they know the value of it. Another thing that I came across the other day was that a lot of artists that you would hear being sampled in hip-hop and R&B music,
mm-hmm.
the record label actually owns those masters. So you would see Kanye West sampling a song or Timbaland sampling a song. You would think, yeah, they just stamp sampling that kind of stuff. No, they actually own the rights. Their labels own the rights to a lot of these masters. And by using it back, actually bringing back value. So now they're getting two sets of payments for one song.
Hmm.
So like, remember Kanye had a song with, Through the
Fire. And
what's her name? Chaka Khan came forward and I was like, oh, when she heard it, she hated it so much. And Kanye came and asked her for permission to use it and she regretted it. Kanye didn't have to ask permission to use that song.
Yeah.
Because the song belongs to somebody, it belongs to the company.
Right.
You understand? And once he strike that deal with the company, like,
and I guess it would be different for somebody like Mariah. You'd have to go to Mariah to get,
if she owns the master, I was a Tony. at the end of the day, the record labels know the business. It's us who are the outside. We don't really know the numbers now. Like, we seeing Michael Jackson songs. Michael Jackson died in 2009.
Yes, 2009.
So that's almost, what, 12 years now?
Yeah. 13.
That's 13 years now. And you see exorbitant growth on his YouTube plays. You're not seeing what his Spotify playlist is, his Apple plays. You're not yet seeing the radio stations that still, record shops that still selling my, like, so the estate actually knows the value of it. Now it's us on the outside who don't really have a clue. So yeah, 250 million might sound like a little bit, or it might sound like a lot, but we have no barometer. We have no barometer to actually tell what the value of his estate and of his music is. I mean, Simple, sorry, but before I go Simple, like Kitchener, I was in Guyana last year, and like just driving through the town, you hear Kitchener on the radio playing and stuff. Kitchener, I was like, these people, we didn't listen to Kitchener.
Yeah, exactly. We don't even care about Kitchener.
You understand? Colonel fighting up to keep his dad legacy alive. Yeah. Guyana. Yo,
the best he moved to pumping. Go to Guyana, right?
Sparrow pumping, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But guess who? Guess who know that Cut? Because Cut collecting from the royalties over there, so Cut people know. Hey, you know we collecting $10,000 from the radio stations in Guyana every year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's one country. Kitchener was popular in London. Kitchener was popular all over the Caribbean. So like we don't know the numbers. My boy Zane, I don't feel remember Zane, one of my business partners, Zane somewhere, I don't know where he is right now, somewhere in the world. And he went to the gym and they had a what's called when you exercise in the gym, like to music.
One of them, them exercise classes.
Zumba,
aerobics. Like a spin class.
So there was this aerobics class, and they were listening to like Latin music and thing. And a Marshall Montano came on, and he called me, and he was like, "Yo, listen to this. I'm in the middle of nowhere, and these people actually in the gym training to a Marshall Montano song."
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have no idea how much money the music makes, and that's why some of these artists get real aggressive with their masters, but it's be too late. So yeah, that's my thing. Okay. Like, we need to figure out the numbers. We need to understand the numbers.
Right. Adri, you wanted to answer.
Well, I was gonna say how you put a value to it. I would say on songs that are already recorded, a value could be put to it based on the demand. So how much people play it, how much people want it, the labels will be able to, you know, put a value to it like that.
Right.
But for a song that isn't released yet, so let's say a label just signed the artist, the label will then have to, they will know how far they could put this artist out, how far they could push the artist. And I think as a from a business standpoint, the record label owning the masters is just them holding collateral, because they spend all this money for the production to get the artist out there.
Okay.
Why would I leave it in the hands of the artist to come to pay me?
I agree.
So
then it's
maybe, like collateral.
So,
I understand.
Can I argue something then?
Mm-hmm.
Could we then, for example, let's compare Mariah to her. Just two random artists I could think of at the top of my head then.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say then that even like the older, that the more seasoned recorded artist Mariah and the whoever versus the her and the whoever and whoever, is it that as time progresses should they shoot towards owning the masters as they get older, or should I mean, you kind of understand what way I'm thinking, because I'm sure her probably owns like one of her masters, but she doesn't own all of them.
Well,
and she's young, significantly young. Go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
The thing is though, if you use Taylor Swift as an example, what Taylor Swift has on her side is the fact that the music, the lyrics, all hers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in a way, so yes, I agree with Adriel that, you know, the label business to business.
Yeah.
The goal of every business entity is to make profit. But the label owning her masters it's almost the same as though they also own that not that artistic credit, but they're claiming something that is hers,
right?
As theirs,
okay.
Right? So I feel like I feel like that is kind of sweet. But that is what made her fight to get her mask.
Mm.
Right, and then she re-recorded most of them.
She re-recorded them and
right.
is mine.
But for artists, I don't know, I can't name any examples of them in my head. But for artists who have to depend on songwriters,
yeah,
I'm on the fence about that one.
Right,
because
right,
if we're gonna talk about record labels holding on to their stuff,
then songwriters should also hold on to their stuff too.
Depending. Yeah,
no, they have yeah. a bit. The songwriting is a biz. Listen to me, yeah. The seven people
yeah.
who does write for Beyonce making coin. Let's get it right. They making coin as much as Beyonce probably making most of the money. They still get in the pocket change. She must be saying there's a 5K a month.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it actually pays.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think, and I mean, and everybody has presented very good points. McCasey said very well that there's no barometer for how we can measure
True.
Value.
Absolutely not.
Because he can't tell me that one song of mine is worth more or less than somebody else's piece of
mm-hmm.
art. And then Adriel is basically saying that the record labels should hold on to something because it is collateral, as per having invested in your career.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
yeah, go ahead.
Uh-huh. What I want to say to us, you, let's say you as a songwriter, right?
I am a songwriter in real life. But yes.
You owning your song and the rights to your song, your master,
yeah.
right? It could be worth $100,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
But put that in my hands, the hands of a record label.
Mm-hmm.
I could carry that value up to $2 million with my marketing team, with everybody to push
right.
it, with my know
it
all how
to
get
two.
Music.
Yeah,
yeah,
it could be worth zero too.
I, that's true. I,
it
could
be
worth
zero
too. Two.
Right. Mm.
So I think that also has a point
to
pay.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like I went to a publishing seminar with Max Goose and some other big publishers that they brought them down to Hilton in one of their hotels now, and I think with Beyonce big song, I think it was like To the Left or some one of them mega
to
monster
left,
songs she had now.
Mm-hmm.
Halo or one of them, probably.
Yeah, probably Halo, one of them monster songs.
Yeah.
And the guy was basically saying, yo, when it is I sign this song, you're probably gonna get like 2%.
Mm.
You might get like 2% of the song. And the guy was like, nah, I'd rather keep my song. The guy was like, are you an idiot? He was like, 2% of a Beyonce song.
Right,
will
right.
be more money than you ever made in your entire life.
Right,
rather
right.
than you keep that song for yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you're real antics in the studio
yeah.
right now.
So for me, 2% on a Beyonce song is life-changing money now, boy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and you're not guaranteed a hit after that, eh?
Yeah.
yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Having a hit song on a Beyonce album is also guaranteeing you future work.
Yeah,
because
true,
you could
true.
Go forward and say, yo, I wrote
a Beyonce song.
Yeah, a Beyonce song. My name on the credits. And people are going to come to you based on that.
Yeah.
You know, so we got to be real careful. Again, you value and care. You work at $100,000 or at $1 million. Like, that's so up in the air, us.
Mm-hmm.
That's so far up in the air that we can't.
So then maybe we could argue that it depends on if it's a hit with the general public.
How are you going to know?
Yeah, if it's
well,
not
no,
a release song already.
Well, no, what
know.
I mean is, like, if I release it now and
yeah.
blow up on the radio
yeah.
like that, could we still can't say?
No, definitely you could say, because you're going to see some forwards from it based on the play on the ground. Mm-hmm.
Right,
as
right.
he said, like, you could only go so far, because guess what? We own the venues.
Mm.
Like, you think you could just book O2 Park to do a solo concert? You can't.
Well, I mean, Adriel,
you know,
have the connects, but I'm going to leave that to
you.
Could,
oh, you know what I mean? Yeah, inside. But at the end of the day, you can't just go. Why Marshall not doing on Madison Square Gardens every day?
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's
true. These people would make it extremely ridiculously expensive for you to do anything.
Right,
yeah. So
right.
They, you have to sign. You have to sign on mm-hmm. the said. But the takeaway for meals, 1% of a Beyonce song is still worth more than you could get from singing that song. Yourself, I don't care what nobody says. We're like, yeah, I could sing it and put it on YouTube and it could go viral. Like, no, bro, that's not life, bro. That's a dream. We're being sold.
Nobody could be Adele.
Tell your mama a nice house, bro.
Yeah, nobody could be Adele. Anyways, I think we. That's a nice note to end on. No pun intended, really. I think we've established a couple of grounds. We've established that value it's a perception. It depends on the individual. It depends, as Adriel said, record labels holding collateral, achieving some kind of barometer for understanding what is the individual artistic value. And then, of course, with Louise providing us with the information as to, well, should we register to get our own masters, or should we just, you know, leave it up to the record label, you know? Personally, guys, I want to find out from y'all, what do y'all think? Should we, as artists, based on all of the opinions that you've heard here, should we all, should artists work towards at least owning some percentage, all, none? You know, based on the information you receive, what do you think? Drop a comment, share. We asking. We want to know. We want to know.
We want to know.
Through the fire. Anyways, before we get struck on YouTube, because we might just, with the amount of samples I'm seeing here tonight. Anyways, I think that's I think that's the end of this episode. Hey guys. Yeah. I want to thank everybody for coming out and that sort of thing. Everything on the website. I mean, is every season not going to be saying the same thing anyways? www.forthemostpartpodcast.com. And we will see you and we will hear you on the next episode. Peace out, guys.
Peace, guys.